Okay, 1 second, yeah. First of all, I want to say good afternoon. Today is March 4th, 2012, and Baruch Hashem, two good things happened this afternoon. One, it stopped raining, and two, Chaim Yosef left me a gift of two fabulous pictures. You have regards from Chaya. Okay, Chaiki sends regards. Okay. I want to thank all those listening across the world as well. And today and tomorrow, I just want to respond from Rabbi Bienstock, I believe from London, if I'm not mistaken, made some very interesting comments on the recent Shayurim, and I'll respond to them. One, let me respond right now, that I mentioned probably in the Monday class how the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't get involved with Halacha L'maisa. When you asked the Mishayla, he would tell you have to ask a posek. And there were very big poskim in Chabad. Some of them were real Litvisha Talmid Chachamim, Rabbi Pekarsky, Rabbi Gustman, Rabbi Rav Gustman. They all began in Chabad. And there were others as well. Metelnik, if I remember the name correctly, they were big, big Ramdanim, Reb Nissen Plushkin, wow. And so Rabbi Bienstock wrote to me one area which I actually lectured on for a year, and I quoted that ever extensively, was the international dateline. We got involved with the whole problem if you lose a day during Sfira or you gain a day, and there the Rebbe was very mockpid, that you have to count 49 days and you could wind up having Shavuos one day earlier than everyone else or one day later. And I actually told the story about a little Jew whose daughter I taught in Mechala, whom I met in Melbourne in the Chabad Beit Medrash. And he told me that year he had 3 days of Shavuot. And I will only say that that story about the Rebbe is correct, but it's the exception that proves the rule. When it came to Sfira, the Rebbe had a very unique viewpoint that he felt was mamish shutosho mikra, and he fought for it. But generally speaking, the Rebbe was not someone to go out and paskin. Now, last week, the heart of the shiur was devoted to the concept that when we have a new question, a difficult question, not a question of Yontif Sheni, again, I want to make it clear, not that I'm mezalzel in Yontif Sheni, chas v'chalila, but Yontif Sheni is a din derabanan. When you have a shayla vaguna, you literally are dealing with mamzerut. So your civil marriage, you're dealing with mamzerut. So in shaylot like that, the greatest rabbanim always made it tonight that this is what I believe lahalacha. But nevertheless, I don't want to paskin unless one or two other great poskim agree with me. And I gave you some fascinating examples. I gave you an example dealing with civil marriage where Rav Herzog and Rav Weinberg, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, Rav Yechiel Yaakov makes it conditional upon Rav Herzog agreeing with him. I gave you an example from the Sri Deyesh. We dealt with a very powerful example where these men became Muslims and left their wives, Agunat, and Nebuch, the wives came in Aliyah, and there's no way to get a get, and their young Agunat, can we do anything to help them, to save them? And without regurgitating once again the halachic issues, they get sikui, but Rav Herzog wanted Rav Weinberg to be involved. Then I gave you an example close to home from Washington Avenue to Washington Street, where I told the story of my own involvement with the Saguna from Nidat Chalitza and how I came up with this fake sveika, and I went to Rav Ovadia, and Rav Ovadia, I'm pleased and I'm humbled to say, agreed with my thinking, except I did it with a few makarot, and he wrote a 21-page handwritten long on legal-sized paper with endless makarot, but he made it talui upon two rabbanim agreeing, And without going into all the details, I got Rav Mashash, I got Rav Yisraeli to agree. So a Talmud, this Rabbi Binshtak, wrote to me that I gave another example in it in different contexts years ago, and I want to quote that example, and there's a very interesting misavot that will come at the end. And I thank Rabbi Binshtak for being maskinish kachat, and this is new material now. A fourth example is from Igrot Moshe, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Evan Ezra, Chelik Aleph, Siman Chaf Chet. Now you will find it very interesting. The Chiv is written to Rabbi Dr. Leo Young of the Jewish Center on the West Side. So I would imagine the Chiv is written in 1952. I would imagine that these were his balabatim. And what was the story? And it's an unbelievable story that he tells. He tells the story of a lady who got a get, or thought she got a get, and listen to Reb Moshe's words, very, very important, that they went for the get, Eitzel Rasha Yidua, Asher B'Shem Rav Charedi Yechuneh, V'natan Lan Miyashem Yidgasha Mibala, Avol Haya B'lo Get Kasher Kishya Yidua Mimaisei Nebala She'oseh Oto Rasha. Could you imagine that she went to this rabbi, uses the word Charedi. It doesn't mean Charedi in the sense we use it. When I grew up, no one used the word Charedi. You were religious, not religious. Dati, Chiloni, those words were used. Charedi, at first, when I came in Aliyah, the word Charedi was considered a pejorative term. Later, it became a descriptive term. And when I used to use the word Charedi in public lectures, I used to say to the audience, I'm not using this in a pejorative sense, rather in a descriptive sense. Today you don't have to say it, because even the New York Times writes the word Charedi. I'm sure it appears already in Webster's Unabridged Dictionary. So he calls this Rav, an Orthodox rabbi, calls him, I don't believe there's any tshuva that I know of from Reb Moshe where he so castigates a so-called Orthodox rabbi, calls him a Rasha, and what did this Rasha do? He evidently, again, Reb Moshe doesn't spell it out, but there are two parts when you do a get. Those of you that have seen a get, I don't know if they have, certainly in Israel, I don't believe they take you from the kollel to see a get being given. I don't know in America whether they do, but I was once at a get with my daughter, wanted to see how they handle a get in America. So I went to the RCA Basin, I made an appointment, and they knew my daughter was very had gotten a lot of publicity. She was the first female rabbinic lawyer. So we're watching the way they do the get in America, and the people, the man who was giving the get, was so offended that outsiders are looking in. I told him, this is a Rav from Israel, it's a lawyer. He was furious. I felt very bad that we were there, you know, like... But some people don't mind. They're giving a get. You get married, 1,000 people are standing around. So, all right, I get divorced, 1,000 people are standing around. It's actually a medrash, which I spoke about in the Monday class a number of years ago. But anyway, be it as it may. So there are two parts to a get. The first part is the actual get. The sefer, they have to do a hakirat shemot. That's the hardest part about giving a get. Because how do you write a name? For instance, Michael is Michael. So you have to write Michael. His Hebrew name is Michael. Is that your Hebrew name? I don't know. What's your Mordechai. Fine. Mordechai is not a problem how to write. But then you have to write Michael. How do you write Michael in Hebrew? All right, you have to figure out how you write Michael. That's maybe an easier name to write. Arnold Edward, my name. How do you write Edward in Hebrew? These are real problems. So after you do a Chakirat Shemot, you then have to assign the sofa, given exactly the names, how to be written, the Mitkayeh, the Mechuneh. I'm not going into Hilchot Gittin now, but I can recommend Sfarim to you that will explain it. There's Kavanoti, that all those was written by a Lubavitcher, I believe it was a Chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek, and there's, or Reb Shmuel, you have to check, but it's a famous Chabad Sefer that many Rabbanim use. And then there was a Yudapayish Rav who came over in the late 30s and went up to Boston, studied with the Rav. The Rav loved him. He went to Baltimore, you have to, it's Rabbi Binyamin Beck, I believe the name was pronounced, B-A-K, if I'm not mistaken. And he was Masada Gittin in Baltimore, and he wrote a very nice sefer. Rav Henkin also has, and Edutli Yisrael had to write names. Rav Telushkin has. So after you give the sefer, then the Baal has to make the sefer, Shliach has to be a get, has to be written Lishma, Lishma, Lishem Gerush, and everything. Then you give the get, and you all know Lachatchiladsk, you want to have a minion, Pirsume, the Pirsum of the Dava. B'dievad, you give it in front of a beitin, and then immediately after the Baal gives the get, the Rabbanim take it back, the woman makes a kinyan, it walks with it, lifts it, etc., and they rip the get, they cut the get, right? This is Minhag Yisrael already from the time of the Rishonim. It's they even found the source for it, get kritut. And why did they cut up, why did they cut the get? Have you ever seen a get? It's cut, it's cut. Why is it cut? So that the Baal can never be paisel the get. He can never be motzilaz on the get. Because if he'll come and say his wife remarries, has four children, and he shows up 10 years later and says to her, you are a nefarious woman, you're a no effort, you're an adulteress, the get wasn't good, this letter was crossed out, that letter was crossed out, I didn't want to tell you, I was laughing all the time, they didn't spell your name properly. So we say to the Baal, you idiot, of course the get is no good, we ripped it up after she gave it, but we, at the time she gave it, the Beis Din saw that it was good. So the woman never gets the get. Actually, the get is kept by the rabbi. All the gittin in Israel are kept on file here by the rabbanim, by the batei dinim, I should say. But what does the woman get? A ktav ptur. She gets a letter from the Rav HaMasada, the get, or the Beit Din, that a get was given in this and this time, and she is Mugureshet. According to what Rav Moshe was writing, this woman never had a real get. All she had was a written document from the rabbi, and the document stated that she is divorced. And I mean, Rabbi, how do you do this? How do you do this? Okay.
You just said that she doesn't get the get.
She got the ktav ptur. All she got was a letter, but everyone knew that this man does not give a valid get. Or doesn't give a get at all. He just gives a ktav ptur, and he says this is the get. I don't know how the man did it, but you'll understand why I don't want to mention his name. Although I have to say, I'm probably one of the last people alive who can tell you the name of the person. No, I don't. You'll understand in five. Give me 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Let me explain what happened here. So, what's the big deal? The first husband evidently was from. The second husband is from. If not from in the sense that we use it today, they were part of an Orthodox congregation. But what happens after a get? How long does the woman have to wait until she remarries? 90 days, kidei lahavchin. You all understand. We want to know if a child is born, is he from the first husband or the second husband? Yitzhak, relax. Relax. He's saying you can do a test to see whether she's pregnant or not. All right, so machlokes apaiskim. But listen, what happened in this case, 1952. So the second husband and the woman tell Rabbi Young that they don't want to wait 90 days because his father is critically ill. And the father desperately wants to see the wedding. And they're worried that if they tell the father they can't do the wedding now, they have to wait 90 days, it will make his condition worse. And chas v'chalila, techlash priuto al davar zeh, it means he can become a goses out of aggravation. Okay. So Rabbi Dr. Young, who you all know is a fabulous rabbi and a wonderful speaker, and my teacher, Yitzchak, I think, also studied with him in Yeshiva College, and a man of great dignity, he turned to Reb Moshe. And he told Reb Moshe, he doesn't know what to do. They refused to wait the 90 days, and they got a good get now. So Reb Moshe paskins lahalacha that in a case like this, Chazal were not goyzer. He says, whenever we talk about waiting 90 days, or whenever we talk about a gezerah of the chachamim, it's always under normal circumstances. But where you have something which is tremendous aggravation, tremendous stress, an abnormal situation, shat hadachak like this, Chazal were never goyzer that you have to wait 90 days. And he brings proofs to other gezeirot that when you can find the leniency in a din derabbanan and the shat hadachak, we will be mekil. Alach at kama v'kama in this case, where it's something like, if I'm not mistaken, 17 years since the original phony divorce. And therefore, Rav Moshe says he would be willing to be matir them to make the wedding right after the second get. But he says he has to consult with Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Yes, Michael.
His reason is not because of the sick father, because of the...
Well, the sick father adds to the shat hadchak. And b'mokum tzar, you've heard that expression in Chazal, b'mokum tzar lo gazvu chachamim. I mean, I give you something, the Gemara in Shabbos deals with going to the ad houses were outside and you had to carry rocks on Shabbos, etc. So b'mokum tzar lo gazvu chachamim. And certainly when it is circumstances that are just totally out of the ordinary. So Rav Moshe brings in Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Even an issue like this, 17 years, so many years, she couldn't possibly be pregnant from the first husband, Rav Moshe brings in Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, and Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin says that not only is Rav Moshe right, but he says, I have another reason why. And here he says something very interesting. And this comes back to Rav Henkin's great respect for the general court system in America. If you recall, last week when we spoke about civil marriage, I mentioned to you that Rav Moshe was mati b'dieved with civil marriage. Even if she doesn't have a get, she can remarry. Rav Henkin disagreed, because Rav Henkin took the point of view, if you take the trouble to go into court, to have a marriage, to have the justice of the peace, to have a civil marriage, it shows you care, that you don't want to live with this woman behefkeret, but you're living with her with a marriage, even if it's a civil marriage. But sexual relations create a marriage, the Mishnah in Kedushin. So Rav Henkin says part of a divorce in the secular courts is that the husband and wife, for the divorce to take hold, for alimony and all that goes with it, they can't live together again. If the husband and wife start living together, the whole divorce, all the agreement, all the legal niceties that came to play are annulled. And he says, we can depend upon the secular courts. If they went through the trouble and they had a secular divorce and they had a legal agreement, they're not going to live together again, and therefore so many years later we don't have to worry about havchana, that who the child will be from. Any child that will ensue will certainly be from the second husband.
It's not right.
What's not right?
You can get a civil divorce and still live together.
But he's taking into consideration the legal aspects, alimony, everything that goes with it. If the woman goes back to living with the man can go to court and say, I don't have to pay alimony. We're living together, common law, whatever. Anyway, you may be right. I also thought of that, Michael. But that's what Rav Henkin says. And it reflects Rav Henkin's great respect for the general legal system. It's Rav Henkin...
And there's certainly no basis to say they wouldn't have relations.
Well, It's Rav Henkin Lefi Shitato, 1952. I also thought that in 2012, this would not be applicable. But I don't know when there's
applicable in 1962.
Yeah, but this is 1952. There's a big difference. Now,
the whole Shaila is only
on the 90 days.
The fact that the Haredi rabbi, quote-unquote,
right,
didn't give a get,
right,
gave a letter saying she's...
As a Torah.
That was not...
It's worthless. It's nothing. That's why she needed a second get. Even though it's 17 years later. If she needs a second get, you got to wait 90 days. She's Mugureshet now, not 17 years ago. That's the Shaila. And that's why Rabbi Young turned and Rabbi Moshe was Matir with the Tanai that they're thinking would agree with him. I would assume the Agudat HaRabbanim is based in New York, gave a valid get. I can tell you something else. Boaz Cohn of the seminary, any get that he gave was accepted by the Agudat HaRabbanim. It's an amazing world, and you don't realize that Boaz Cohn, who is professor of response literature at JTS, he headed up the basin of the rabbinical of JTS, I think it was, not the rabbinic assembly, and any get that Boaz Cohn gave was accepted by every basin in the United States. That's how reliable and how good his reputation was. Now, gentlemen, Aaron Rakefet did a little research. I remembered the name. I remembered the synagogue. Here's a picture of the rabbi. Of the rabbi we're talking about, the Russia, walking at a Hachnasat Sefer Torah to his synagogue in New York City. The synagogue today is in the hands of Chabad. Chabad, it's unbelievable, it's in mid-Manhattan. Now, why don't I want to mention his name? Because I want you to know his great grandson sat before me in this very room with a wonderful Talmud. And he once came to me and said, Rebbe, is it true that Reb Moshe maledicted my great-grandfather? That's what I'm told, and he did some terrible acts. I said, I'm looking at you. I'm not looking at your great-grandfather. I didn't want to. But it shows you the power of Torah, that this maneuver, this Russia, that Reb Moshe, and there are other things he did. You got to see what you come up with there, where he was, where some spy, he was Masada Kedushin, he did Geirut, he was caught up in the mid-Manhattan crowd, I'll put it that way. And I wouldn't say a word, and I didn't want the boy to know. Let it stand on the way I answered him. But look at the schut this man has. I know some great rabbanim from 1952 who seemingly would tzaddikim. No, where are their great-grandchildren today? And here's a man that Reb Moshe calls a Russia. And take a look, his great-grandson said, writing this kollel a few weeks ago. Okay, so now you understand why I don't want to mention the name? Privately, I can tell you the name. I can tell you the synagogue, but I don't want to mention it in public. Gentlemen, what's fascinating is when we have a difficult she'elah, we can't carry the burden alone. We have to be humble. We have to be modest. We have to bring together a number of great rabbanim. And don't be anxious or quick to criticize. I've seen some people, it can be matir, right? They're so quick to jump the gun. When it comes to difficult halacha, we can be tremendous lamdanim, but there has to be a certain amount of diffidence, humility, and it's always better Tovim hashtayim min ha'echad v'ha'chut ha'meshulash lo b'mechira yinatek. And that's a pasuk in Mishlei, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Zayin Amud Bet, the Gemara I quoted to you, is a very famous Gemara that all the Gedolei Yisrael quote that Gemara. She yishtarteif imo, that that he calls upon someone ki chaychi delimitje shiba mikishura, carry a chip away from the beam. And what does it mean? Sanhedrin Daf Zayin Amid Bet. It's a very famous Gemara. You'll see this so many times in Aguna, when they're muttering Aguna, they use this expression time and again. I need another great posek to agree with me, another two great poskim to agree with me. And they have to carry some of the chips away from the beam. It means we have to share in the achrayat. Okay. That's the first point. And I thank Rabbi Bienstock for reminding me of what I lectured on many years ago. Okay, now I want to come to a second point and come into an area that will occupy our minds for a number of weeks to come. You see, a psak, and we've mentioned this, a psak is very cold, very down to earth. It's like a legal textbook. A legal textbook. You get a psak, A, B, C, D. Lahavdil, you look into the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Aleph, Sif Aleph, Sif Bet, Sif Gimel. A tshuva, you see the way a person thinks. You see his development. You see in rabbinic Hebrew the Beit HaYotzer, and you ultimately get to the Yitzirah. But the thought process is there before your eyes. And let me tell you a little story that you'll find interesting. I don't know how many people already know this. You will know the Rav had a younger brother, Reb Baron Soloveitchik. The Rav had two brothers. I was privileged to study with all three brothers. The Rav, Reb Shmuel, and Reb Aaron. Reb Shmuel was a chemist, but outside of class, we used to bother him stories about his family. And it's very hard to be a Soloveitchik. I can tell you a true story that anyone from my era remembers. In Israel, there was a tremendous battle between the Brisker Rav, Reb Velvel, and the Zionist element. And there was some issue where Reb Velvel used very strong words against Mizrahi. It might have been Gius Banot, it might have been Sheirut Lumi. These were tremendous issues. Doesn't matter. We see the same thing now. There are big battles going on in the state of Israel with the latest development with the Supreme Court and Chok Tal and Hadarat Nashim, and what Nehemiah asked me is, you have no idea how correct I answered you. Do you know that in Gush Etzion there was an election campaign for mayor of the Gush, and there were posters where the woman's picture was running as a scum whose family was wiped out by terrorists. I know the family. The lady killed was my student, etc. Do you know that 9-year-old kids defaced the poster because a woman's picture was on it? And these were kids with big kippot sukkot. So I quote Rakefet, that the Chadalim are emulating, mimicking the worst traits of the Haredi world, that are one big Chilul Hashem. Quote, end quote. Don't get me upset. It hurts. So, Reb Shmuel, after class, we said to him, Professor Soloveitchik, look what your uncle just said. And he made the comment as, oh, my uncle was always a little bit crazy when it came to Hashkafa, very extreme. Do you know that all over New York, the rumor went that Rav Soloveitchik defaced his uncle. And in Chaim Berlin, and in Torah Vedas, and in Lakewood, they were going crazy, because the Rav happens to have been very close to the Brisker Rav. And you all know that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein considers his father-in-law's hesped for the Brisker Rav the greatest piece of Torah, Hashkafa, philosophy that Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik ever expressed. I believe that it's his hesped for Rav Chaim Heller, but we're not far apart. These hespedim were given within weeks of each other, and they're both unbelievable classics of the heights that a human being, Bekedusha Vitara, can reach. all over New York. They were going crazy. And we said, Edith Nemanari, then it was before emails and shmemails, but endless telephone conversations, that it was Reb Shmuel Soloveitchik, not the Rav. Now, Reb Aaron was the youngest brother. Reb Aaron grew up in Poland. His father goes to America in 1929. Takes about another year till Reb Aaron can join his parent, his father in America. It's a whole story with Warsaw, with the American consul, anti-Semites. It's beyond words. So finally, Reb Moshe is very upset. Reb Aaron's bar mitzvah is coming. He's not going to be there. Reb Aaron is in Warsaw. So Reb Moshe tells the Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Pesha, to hire a teacher for Reb Aaron. Can anyone tell me who that teacher was? Who was it? Reb Yitzchak Kotner. The Shemesh is right on. And Reb Yitzchak Kotner was very close to Reb Moshe. So he became Reb Aaron's, I would say, role model, his Rebbe. Reb Aaron comes to America, and the day he comes, he goes into his father's class. He remains in his father's class for the next 10 years, goes to MTA, goes to Yeshiva College, gets smicha. Reb Aaron once told me, I almost didn't graduate high school. You don't know how much aggravation I had. My poor father, I didn't take the course in swimming. Finally, they allowed me to go swimming that summer in George Washington High School, which was a few blocks from Yeshiva, MTA Yeshiva College. And he got credit, and he was able to graduate. I don't know if that was high school or college, but I heard this story from Reb Aaron. So now Reb Aaron needs a job. So Reb Aaron becomes a Rebbe in Yeshivat Chaim Berlin. Nope, he needs Parnassa. You can imagine what Yeshivat Reb Chaim Berlin paid. So Reb Aaron goes to law school and he becomes a lawyer. Ah, can anyone tell me how Reb Aaron made a living? Tell the class, Yitzchak, do you know? He wrote Tshuvot. In other words, it's not just the brief, you lose the concept. A lawyer has to appear in court. It's not enough to quote law books. It's not enough to quote Lahavdil, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, the Shach, the Taz, the Magen Avram, the Chelkat Mechokek, the Beit Shmuel. You have to quote sources and develop ideas. It's like a tshuva. And Reb Aaron transferred his method of writing response to literature. He wrote briefs for lawyers who had to appear in court. And that's how Reb Aaron supplemented his income until he left Chaim Berlin and came to Yeshiva University. And as they say, the rest is history. Some of it good, some of it sad, with Chicago and all that goes with it. So you see that writing a brief is a lot different than appearing before a judge. Now, and saying, Your Honor, look at this textbook, law number 3002, look at this textbook. When you write the brief, you interpret it, and you pull out the salient points, and you put it together, and apply it to this woman or man who's appearing in court. So Reb Aaron's briefs become ultimately invaluable. Now, here we come to a golden question. Tell me, which is more important? Which has more validity? A psak halacha or a tshuva? Where there's a machloket, where there's a contradiction, which is more important? And let's think for a moment. You're writing a sefer of psak halacha. So many sferim have been written. Let's take the classic sefer written in our generation. And Nebuch, it's caught up now with the Feldheim difficulty. Shmirat Shabbat Gehilchata was published by Feldheim. The first edition, the second edition, and of course the third edition, which is a masterpiece. Okay? You don't know, not aware, it's a tremendous volume. You should see all the footnotes and a lot of material has been added. It's a third edition, volume one, a third edition. I think. No. The chumras come in on the issue of the vade shemesh, the dud shemesh. How do you say that in English? The water tanks? No, the sun. Solar panels. What are it? Solar panels? The dud shemesh. I don't know if there's a perfect English word for it, but a dud shemesh. That's the big chumra. He really didn't change his mind. If you look at the footnotes, you'll see. You want to be Mekir, Yesham Milesmoch, Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Reb Avadji Yosef. There's a lot, you can be Mekir. But okay, it's not important now. What is important, Rav Neuwirth wrote Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata. Why did he write the story of Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata? Because what he tells the story in the introduction, running away from the Nazis in Holland, the underground. One time they were forced to be Mechallel Shabbos. And he felt so bad that he was Mechallel Shabbos, he was a kid, that he vowed he would write a sefer about Shabbat. And no one has written a more important sefer, influenced by Reb Shlomo of Yosef Zevin, with a tremendous, orderly, scholarly, critical technique. It is a fabulous sefer. But now just think, he's writing a sefer. Is anyone bothering him? Is anyone pressing him? Is anyone, to use a modern Hebrew word, loketz alav, hu lachutz? Question mark. No. You write a sefer, b'menuchat ha-nefesh. It's no pressure. It's not the end of the world. What you don't finish today, you'll finish tomorrow. You follow me? Danny, it's a very interesting question. You take a tshuva. A tshuva is written under tremendous pressure. Could you imagine Rabbi Young calls Rabbi Moshe Feinstein? And remember, Rabbi Young was one of the leading rabbis. And with Rabbi Moshe, he may have been the leading rabbi. Because, there were three leading rabbis. If you're familiar with the Rav, what the Rav said, what Rakefet quotes, what Yitzchak knows I'm about to say, there were three leading rabbis in New York. There was Rabbis Young, Lichtenstein, and Goldstein. Young on the Upper West Side, Goldstein a little lower, Lichtenstein on the East Side. Rabbi Lichtenstein, his shul was not, didn't have that many from people 70, 80 years ago, but it was a shul with a lot of money. Rabbi Goldstein was very elech, but he wasn't a great Talmud Chacham, he was a graduate of JTS when it was still strictly Orthodox. Rabbi Young had a shul, both with elicha people, also with money people, and Rabbi Young already was a Talmud Chacham, so Rabbi Moshe certainly could relate to him 100%. And he Poli Aguda, he was the president of Poli Aguda Yisrael, and Rabbi Young is on the phone. I don't know if he spoke Yiddish. I imagine he did. And he says, Rav Feinstein, I have this problem. They're pressing me. The man, the father-in-law is very sick. If I'm not Masonic condition, they got to get a kosher get now. You all know what our nice faf is telling Rav Moshe, that rabbi is across town. And the pressures on Rav Moshe. You can't sit with Benuchat HaNefesh. And it's not something, if I don't do it today, I'll do it tomorrow. When you write Shuvah, I write about this in my article, Rabbi Yitzchokhan Inspector, it appears in Rekhafet Aron. I write about this in my monograph from Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, it appears in Rekhafet Aron. And Shuvah, to run the pressures of life, it's grinding away at you. So tell me, which is more important? Which is more valid? So logically speaking, you would say, well, writing a book of psakim, writing without pressure, writing where you can think it through to the end, what you don't do today, you do tomorrow, what you don't do this month, you do next month, that logically should be more important than a tshuva written under unique circumstances and endless pressure. My dear students, when you write Tshuvot LaHalacha, you have special Siyata Dishmaya. Logic doesn't work here. It's a gift from God. If you're a Talmud Chacham and you care about Klal Yisrael and you're concerned with a woman who wants to remarry and has these difficulties, and they're difficulties that have nothing to do with her. She's a victim of circumstances. She went to an Orthodox rabbi, a Rav Haredi. In a million years, they didn't know that this man was totally unreliable. You want to help her? You have Siyata Dishmaya. And that becomes a classic principle in Psak literature in Shelat U'Tshuvat. It's the Gemara in Baba Batra, Daf Kuf Lamed Amid Bet. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Lemeidim Halacha, Lo Mipi Limud, Velo Mipi Ma'ase, Ad Sheyomru Lo, Halacha L'Ma'ase. And the main concept, when you have the paskin, it's not the intellectual pursuit. It's not what you hear stories about. It's when Rabbanim work it out and tell you it's halacha lemaisa, that's what you can depend upon. And there's a certain, as you will see, a siyata d'shmaya, that when you want to work out halacha lemaisa, God is with you. And this becomes critically important. Now, I want to introduce you to an unbelievable source. This source, someone can pick it up, and there may be enough material to do a master's thesis or a master's project. It could even be a doctoral thesis if you incorporate the entire era and the question. Also, let me show you the difference. This is, I'm going to quote the Maharil in a minute. This is the original printing. If you see, rabbinic printing kills your eyes. You have to be able to read the small rabbinic printing. We're privileged in Eretz Yisrael. An entire edited, beautiful version of the Maharil. Now, during the Crusades, and this is the issue, we have to take cross-references and historically and date it, you have the date, you can put it all together. During the Crusades, whatever the reason is, when people go to war, they not only kill, but they rape. And they rape, and this goes on, we're in the year 2013 today, this goes on until today. They rape for two reasons. One reason is Yifat Torah. What the Torah tried to dignify and raise to a higher level, men are in battle, they're away from their homes, they're like animals, they have women, they rape them. There's a second aspect, of course, that when you kill someone, you show you're his master. When you rape someone, you show you're their master. It's psychological. I need not tell you the greatest proof, the Nazis. How did you ever have what's called field tours? I don't want to translate it. You understand the word. Jewish women who were available? How the Nazis are a pure race. How are they allowed to live with Jewish women, have relations with Jewish women? But you see, away from home, in battle, even the Germans, Yimach Shmam V'Zichram, overlooked their own Nuremberg laws. Okay, so this is a fact of life. We have to accept it. The Arab propaganda every once in a while and in their textbooks paints the IDF not only as a conquering army, not only an army that kills, but an army that rapes. I can tell you that nothing is further from the truth, and percentage-wise, it is the holiest army ethically and morally in the world. Yes, there may be isolated cases. Not everyone in the army is at Tzadik Yesod Olam. But percentage-wise, I stand on what I just said. Now, how does this present the problem? Gentlemen, how many of you are familiar with Naomi Regan's novels? This very problem comes up in her novels. It's based upon a real-life situation that actually happened. And let's just briefly speak about the halacha. You can find it all in Evan Ezra. It's Sugyas and Ketuvot. Maybe some of you learned these sugyas. Women captured by the Gentiles, if they are raped, they do not become adultery. It's not considered adultery, and they can go back to their husbands. So number one, Gentiles conquer women. You have to know that they were forced into the relationship. If they were not forced, and women slept with them willingly just to save their lives, it's already more of a problem. Although we can say that this is not considered willingly, it's simply to save one's life, and a woman who is passive in a sexual relationship, you all know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Esther Kakolim Haita, could be that it's not considered adultery and we can permit it to go back to her husband. Yes, all this is very good and fine for 90% of the questions. This past Shabbat, my 6:30 minyan established the record. 25 people davening, 5 kohanim. 20% of the population. No? If a woman has relations with a non-Jew, willingly, not willingly, raped, seduced, she gets a chalei shem zona, and she cannot marry a kohen. And again, I caution you, don't mix up the word zona with the way it's used in modern day Hebrew. Zona is a halachic concept, and that's the status that a woman has. This is why Rabbanim out in the fields today, and some of you are going to be out in the fields, and you're going to be far away from New York. And I was just talking with someone in America, they're telling me about the shul that might want me to be scholar in residence, but I should know the people aren't too firm. I said, believe me, that's not a problem for me. I have a problem when they're too firm and they're charedim and they hear religious Zionist point of view. That's my problem. My problem is not the opposite, I hope. Anyway, be it as it may, you're a rabbi. This young man comes to you, a Baal Tshuva in your shul, a Kohen, and he says, Rebbe, I want to get married. I want you to meet my fiancée. And you meet this girl, a Baal Tshuva, graduate of some university in America. Tell me, can you perform that wedding? He's a Kohen. He's 26 years old. She's 24. Went to a big university. Bachelor's, master's. Became from her fourth year in college. Just think what I'm saying. I don't want to spell it out. You got a real problem. A real problem on your hands. No, don't ask, don't tell. Perhaps. Perhaps. But it's a real problem. Today on a college campus, in a high school already, go into the lavatory, prophylactics are for sale in a machine. It's the world we're living in. You have to bench Gomel if it's a man and a woman and not two men or two women. Shem Yirachem. The New York Times sets the standards. We all live in two worlds, even Satmar Hasidim, as we now see, and as your Rebbe knew long before, what is it called? Unorthodox, disorthodox. Give me the name of the new book. No? What's it called?
Unorthodox.
Baruch Hashem. Baruch Shekivanti. We all live in two worlds. Suddenly two other women showed up. I can't believe what's happening. They're all models. Every Hasidic woman is a model suddenly, is a movie actress. It's unbelievable. We all live in two worlds. The New York Times and the Daily News influence, as Rakepit said years ago, a Satma Chassid in America is no longer an Ingarashi Chassid. He's an American Satma Chassid with pure American values. To a certain degree, an inverted Murano. Know what that means, an inverted Murano? Anus Hafuch, that's the term I used in the army. On the outside, that Kukdaisvi Ashena Velayid, Payas and Abod Nalps, and on the inside, his values are money, 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 could be sex as well. New York Times, everything that goes on. You have to fight it. You have to be strong. You have to have a lot of Torah. You have to know when you can be, when the Geirur has to win out, and when you're allowed to be a Toshav. I've dashened it, my Rebbe dashened it. It's not for now. But this is the reality. No. Can you be Masada Kadosh? Now let me tell you a real story that happened in Williamsburg. You tell me the story. Early 70s. What, you don't remember, Michael? I thought your name is Wise Man. Yaakov, a woman in Satma, went to mikveh. On the way out of the mikveh, she was raped by a citizen of Borough Park, not a Jewish man. Don't want to use the pejorative term. She was raped. Raped. No doubt about it. Only one problem. Her husband was a Kohen. And here you had the tremendous shaila that they had no solution. Can she go back to her husband? A woman's going to mikveh, coming out of mikveh. It was a terrible, terrible story. You should know at that point Satmar developed patrols and they had political pressure, and they lit up Williamsburg. If you ever saw Williamsburg at night, where the Satmar live, where the heavy Hasidic crowd is, it makes Yerushalayim look pitch dark at night. And it's a result of that incident. Naomi Regan writes about it. It's in one of her novels. Novels are based upon real-life incidents. You pick it up, and you turn it into a novel. If Rav Kefir had any seichel, instead of writing books of Torah in Washington Avenue, I told you already what I should be writing about. No, what can I do? I'm Aaron Rav Kefir. I'm not Deborah Feldman. Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, now let's come back to the Crusades. She can't go back. It's a coin.
So she's victimized twice.
Exactly. It's a tragedy of tragedies. That's exactly.
And he can't stay with her. So
it'll be a chaval. Yitzchak. You can't throw out Gemaras. It's an open Gemara. They look into the Shulchan Aruch. It's a tragedy. We'll do everything in our power. I don't want to spell out. Maybe there wasn't a Gemabia. Maybe say the. You do what you can. But they couldn't do anything. She was raped. A total rape. Period.
Can you renounce being a Kohen?
No, you can't denounce. No, there's no way to renounce being a Kohen. Yitzchak, don't quote conservative rabbi.
He becomes an
Avayah. We're talking about from Jews. This is an Ungarische Satma Chassid circa 1970, not yet reading the New York Times. Anyway.
I don't.
Not dissolved. He has to give a get. She can't come back to him. But anyway, that case was a tragedy.
And then there's kinder and everything. That's it.
Yeah.
It's cruel.
Gentle, cruel. Yeah. And when a young man comes to you and he's in love with a Giyorit and he's a Kohen and you tell him he can't marry a Giyorit, the Rav didn't cry. And of course, this is the halacha. What, the halacha is only good when it's a lollipop? Where are you? And the girl that I know from Beis Yaakov that saw her mother killed on Shabbos morning walking back from a kiddush, some Puerto Rican drunk driver went up on the sidewalk in Flatbush on Ocean Parkway or Coney Island Avenue it was, I even know the bus stop, and went up right near the bus stop where they were sitting and whatever, walking, killed her mother in front of her on the spot, totally walked away from religion. Took her 20 years to come back. What she went through. What can I tell you? And the Holocaust wasn't cruel?
That doesn't deal with
Allah. No. Life is cruel.
So that's the extreme case, right? But if you...
Let me deal with the Mario. This is the situation. It's a terrible situation. We agree. But there's halacha. Can't... And the kid with the giyoret and the rev and the symbol on the tombstone. What the rev cried about. What can I do? I had, and she made him religious. You remember the words of the Rav. She made him religious. And now she has to walk away and start a love. What can I do? My hands are tied. This is halacha. The Vashem's the halacha. If we're going to play games with it, we become conservative and ultimately reform and ultimately nothing. Okay. My dear students, this problem came up during the Crusades. It became a cause celebre. Many of the greatest rabbanim in Germany dealt with the problem. It went back and forth. It seems that most of the great poskim of the time certainly were willing to be matir, the women returning to their husbands when the husbands were not kohanim. With the Kohanim, there was a much deeper problem. And some were matir, some were not. They tried to find avenues of escape. Maybe it wasn't a proper relationship, a proper sexual relationship. I don't want to go into details. It's not my mouth can't utter in public some of the concepts involved. But all the leading giants of Ashkenazic Jewry got involved in this terrible, horrendous problem. Now, the main sources are found in Shele Tuchuvat Maharil, the Maharil Rabbeinu Yaakov Molin, Maharil, Moreinu Harav Rabbi Yaakov Molin, one of the great Ashkenazic Gedolei Yisrael of this period. All of you know that a good deal of the Ramah, the whole influence on the Ramah, Psak Halacha, Trumat Hadeshin, the Maharil, these were among the main influences on Ashkenazic halacha, which affect everyone until today. Now, I'll tell you what the problem is with the Maharil and why a lot of research would have to go into this incident. You'd have to establish from the general text, the non-Jewish sources, where it happened, when it happened, exactly. You have to go through all the halacha and all the sources in Masechet Ketuvot, the Rishonim, the Psak and the Shulchan Aruch, and all that we later have. But going back to the period of the Rishonim, these tshuvot fly back and forth. It's hard to tell what the exact order is, what came first, what the ultimate decision was. There's a world of shakla v'targa here. But you'll understand why I'm quoting it, because there is one fabulous, important source in it that is quoted by every subsequent posek. Now, I'm going to quote from the edited edition. Sheilatu Tshuvat Mahariel, put out by the Mif'ol Torat Chachmei Ashkenaz, that it was part of Machon Yerushalayim. Machon Yerushalayim was a tremendous undertaking that began in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, and they put out the Torah journal Moriah, and they started editing Rishonim and Achronim. And they have done magnificent work, so that you have in Israel, you have Machon Yerushalayim, you have Yad Rav Herzog, you have Mossad Rav Kook, you have the universities that now are so famous because of Herat Shulayim, you have the universities, whether it's Hebrew U or Bar Ilan in particular, doing basic spade work in editing Rishonim and Achronim as well. In the United States, you have Ofek, Rav Avraham Shoshana, who is a Moroccan kid who wound up in Tells, a Gon Sheb Ga'inim, one of the real giants of our generation, and they are doing basic spade work as well. You've all, for instance, the Mesilat Yesharim, the best edited edition, was put out by Ofek. Ofek now is putting out Bab Metzia, Otsa HaGa'inim. Reb Menashe Binyamin Levin died in the middle of working on Bab Metzia, so we now will have, I just ordered it for our library, in addition to the Otsa HaGa'inim, and they have finished Bab Metzia, we will now have a complete Bab Metzia, and they're now working further on Baba Batra. Sanhedrin we have. Can anyone tell me how? Reb Meir Simcha Feldblum's doctorate at Bernard Revel Graduate School was Otsa HaGa'inim on Masechet Sanhedrin. So I'm quoting from the edited edition done by Harab Yitzchak Tzatz, Samach Tzadik. I don't know what it stands for, what the origin of the name is. It can very well be Satz Svardi Tzadik, perhaps, working on an Ashkenazic manuscript. And it's Siman Ayin Bet. And here he's corresponding with Mahari Segel. Hinei Nichtavli Biad Nishay B'nei Ashtreich. And here you have an unbelievable description of these women captured, and then they separate them, two in a room, three in a room. Why didn't they want a big crowd together? Because psychologically, in numbers, you feel strength. If there'd be 100 women in one room, and they're going to say to them, either convert or we will kill you, the women will not convert. But if you have two or three in separate rooms and you go on to say, we will kill you, then it's a lot more pressure on these women. Some of them converted to save their lives. Others didn't convert at all. Some of them converted to save their lives, and then when the crusaders left, came back to Yiddishkeit. It's exactly the same story. We spoke about it in great length when we dealt with the Holocaust. how many people converted or faked conversion to save their lives during the Holocaust. Shem Yerachem, how many children in yeshiva today are direct descendants of people who wore a cross, went to church, drank the wine, ate from the holy wafers. What they don't drink from the wine, pardon
not
me.
Only
who?
Only the Protestants.
And the Catholics?
The Catholics, only the priests.
Only the priests drink. Oh, Baruch Hashem, the priests at least make Kiddush, the masses. What do they watch? And what about the wafers?
The wafers is the body of.
Yeah, and who eats that?
Everybody.
Oh, everybody eats that, okay. Yitzchak is a bucky in Minhag HaCatholics, Kalakavod. But you see here, some of them were married to Yisraelim, Leviim. Some of them were married to Kohanim. And here, he brings in a footnote that the Truma Kadeshin, he gives you the source, Reish Men Aleph, he says, everyone knows what happened in Austria, and he gives the exact date. And the women were captured for many days. Some were in their house, some were separated, some were enticed to leave the path of righteousness. Some converted away from Judaism. And some were without their husbands for a month or more. Some returned to Yiddishkeit. Some remained without their husbands, even for a longer period. Some ran away and didn't convert. And he writes, all the Gedolei Yisrael, without exception, from that period, had to deal with this question, halacha lemaisa. What a question. What problems. What do you do? How do you handle it? And you see here the entire correspondence and what went on before and why they're so desperate to help the Kohanim as best they can. Maybe some of these women came back and they were young girls, they were not yet married, and they are still virgins. Maybe the fact that they're virgins, they can marry Kohanim, that the Gentiles did not penetrate. And then on page Tzadi Vav of the edited edition, you find that he's writing to Rav Avraham Katz, and Rav Avraham Katz, when he was dealing with this very question, was quoting the Poskim. And when the Maril quoted earlier Tshuvot, where they seemed to be lenient, Rav Avraham Katz writes to him, Ein lismoch al ha-tshuvot. They're written under pressure. They're written under duress.
He's writing this to the Maril.
To the Maril. They're written under duress. Rabbi Reuben is yelling at the great poskim, have mercy on the women, have mercy on a Jewish daughter. Why should she suffer? They were conquered, they were captured, their lives were at stake. Why must they suffer? Why must they be punished twice? And he's rebuking the Maharil who quoted Tshuvot, who were notel lahakel, who seemed to be lenient. And the Maharil opens up his heavy guns and he tells this Rav Avraham Katz, Adaraba, halacha lemaisa havei, v'yalfinin minai hutvei, midivrei haposkin, shelo hayu bishat hora'ah. And he quotes the Gemara, I quoted to you from Baba Batra, He quotes the Gemara that when it's halacha lamaisa, it is better than any psak. Somehow the pressures of life, the desire to help, the responsibility of Torah Hashem to Mima makes the posek right, reach a proper conclusion, the siyata d'shamaya, that even the Ribbono Shel Olam is helping that posek so that he can help the Torah people. And he says, this is why many times in the Gemara we find the expression halacha lemaisa, and I'll give you an example in another few minutes beyond the Gemara in Baba Batra. And he quotes the Arzarua. This is an earlier Rishon, that the Arzarua many times says it's halacha lemaisa she'ein kan safek v'gimgum. You don't have to be hesitant. You don't have to be worried. V'hatshuva shepasku ma'aseh haynu halacha lema'aseh. And if you take a tshuva, you can depend upon it. It was published, it was written, it circulated. It is halacha lemaisa, the kol rabotai shachach ha-talmud, kulho maitel mitshuva bekamai. And all the great rabbanim after the Talmud always bring tshuva, always want to see the precedents, always want to extract what is halacha lemaisa, and they depend upon the tshuva. It's not just theory, it's not just philosophy, it's not just writing a textbook, but this is halacha lemaisa, and if they depended upon the tshuva, va'anan yatme diyatme kol shekein v'kol shekein. We, our generation, he's writing about already a generation of gedolim shebe gedolim. He's writing about a generation during the Rishonic period. And we, he says, are like Yatomim. It's the Gemara. HaRishonim kemalachim, anachnu, they're two gesot, but one gesot, one reading is in one place in Chazal, anachnu b'nei tamuta. There's another gesot, anachnu b'nei anashim. V'HaRishonim b'nei anashim, if they were humans, anachnu chamarim, v'afilu loka chamash, v'pinkis ben ya'ir. And he says about our generation, we are so much lower. And if they depended upon a tshuva, halakha lema'aseh, certainly we can depend upon this tshuva and paskin halakha lema'aseh. Hold on, Nehemiah, and then he goes on, and you see, they go back and forth, and it could very well be, if we know that the women would snuot and would do everything in their power to avoid that the Gentiles should sleep with them in an entire fashion, he brings down sources that we would be matter them to a Kohen. And he brings down from the Marie Mekurbal, one of the earlier Rishonim in Germany, that he was matter to a Kohen. And then he brings down other sources that they were mafalka, but some acid, some were matia. But he goes back and forth. We don't know a final answer what ultimately happened. My educated guess is that as far as the general population, they were matter the women. As far as the Kohanim, yesh v'yesh. That's the conclusion I reach. But I can't say I researched all the literature and all the corresponding general literature. And this would make a fabulous research, probably from master's, postdoctorate, very fascinating topic. If anyone has really researched it thoroughly, then please, anyone listening, please let me know. But I have to show you one more important source, one more Gemara that he quotes.
Yeah. If our real raw sources
Well, he's trying. He's trying to bring sources, but he brings other sources that were machmer. He brought both sides.
Okay, but now, can we go and say, okay?
No, you have to check the case. You have to see the status of the woman, her physical
state. She's going to say she's going to tell yes. She tells you the truth.
If she actually slept with the guy and there was total penetration, there's no way you can be mata her to return to her husband if he's a Kohen.
And if she wasn't married yet?
If she wasn't married yet, you would have to send her to an obstetrician and come back and get a report on her physical status. If she's no longer a virgin, it'd be very hard to be matar her to a Kohen. But on the other hand, if she says, I was captured, but I didn't stick a melon in ketuvah, the tsnuah, the prudsat, and she says she was a tsnuah, and she didn't sleep, could very well be, we'll accept it and permit her to go back to her husband, etc. The case in Williamsburg was a terrible case because there was no question as to what happened, and there was no question that it was a total rape. Total penetration. God have mercy. And it's a fascinating novel that Naomi Regan writes, if you recall the novel with the grandson, how the Afro-American coloring comes out in the grandchild and all the gossip that goes on. It's a tragedy. To be a human being is semi-tragic. Didn't the Rav say that so many times? We're constantly bitsa. Mimamakim karaticha Hashem. Quote, end quote. Yes, Nechemiah.
Is there a difference in how a posek makes a decision based if, let's say, one woman is raped in Williamsburg in 1990? Yes, it's horrible. Yes, it's tragic. But is there a difference between that and 5,000 are like raped in like Germany in 1096, and you have to solve this problem?
Well, not every problem can be solved, but I'll translate it. After the Holocaust, there were tens and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of women who didn't know the whereabouts of their husbands. So we did everything in our power. Did the rabbi succeed entirely? All I can tell you is I gave many lectures on it. And to give you one simple example, this guy from Borough Park who made a little money in America, first thing he did, he visits Israel. It's 1966 or 65. It's a real story, a real case. And it's earlier. Excuse me, it's 50. Let's place it at 58, 59. Makes a little money, he visits Israel. It was a big thing then. And where do you go to when you first come to Israel? A Jew from Bar Park, or from Jew, a survivor? Where do you go first then? B'nai Brak. So walking the streets of B'nai Brak, and he meets his first wife. She remarried, had two children learning in Yeshiva Panovich Letzia Rim. Okay? No, she had a chetta from Gedolei Yisrael to remarry. She had all the proof in the world, circumstantial proof. That's all you need, Lahatir Aguna. If you had a body, she's not an Aguna by definition. Now what do? You follow? And that's a tragedy of tragedies.
So after the Holocaust, would you say that there was more room, that like rabbis tended to lean towards the...
Because there were tens of thousands involved, they did everything possible. Did they succeed all the time? No. There were terrible tragedies that developed as a result. By the way, these tragedies, some were solved. But they were solved in a... the reason I changed the date to 58-59... is because I know who solved the problem, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank died in 1961, Rav Asher Yerushalayim, and I know that he would never publish the tshuva because he didn't want the kids on the street, the yinglach who learn in yeshiva, to maledict him. You know, the average Torah Jew learning Gemara is an Amaretz, it doesn't matter. So he learned 100 Daf Gemara, big deal. So he learned 200 Daf Gemara. There's not a Paskin, there's no Shas, there's no Poskin. And our minds, you know, we are brainwashed. Aguda, Mizrahi, from, not from, we understand. Uniforms, no uniform. So he refused to say that. I have a document in my possession that's very valuable. I've made copies for Rabbanim who have the same problem and they want Al Mila Smoch. But it's not for now. Yes, yeah, yes, yes. I write about it in Rekhafadar and it appeared in Tradition, but I don't give all the details because I didn't want to be hounded by people who want the document. You have to know. I'll only give it to someone who I know is a Yerushalmayim, if you understand me. Yes, Mindy.
Did it record and implement the Psalm at one point? Didn't he actually utilize the
Rav Gorin?
Yeah,
no. No, the case of the Achva Achot was a different heter altogether. He couldn't have utilized that psak because the first dozen was no longer alive to give a get. Okay? Gentlemen, give me one more minute. Let me show you an open Gemara. Brachot Chof Talib Amr Aleph. Now, I just want to make a general comment. It comes up in all of Shas. Chazal had a very open attitude towards sex. You can't learn biology from the Gemara. You can't learn mathematics entirely from the Gemara. You can't learn statistical analysis from the Gemara. You can't learn Hamlet from the Gemara, to quote Rabbi Lichtenstein. But you can learn sex. Chazal had a totally open attitude. A healthy, beautiful attitude. And the Gemaras that blow your mind with how open they are. Nope. I'm walking to the cultural Friday night. And I see these kids running around. It's 40 minutes before sunset. They have tefillin on. No, can anyone tell me where these kids all study? Thank you. Talmud Torah in the old city, Zuberbergs. It's from Germany to England to Israel. Very interesting method. You know more about them? First they learn Tanakh. Then when they're 10 they start Mishnah. And when they're 15, they start Gemara. I think now they make it a little early. They mamish follow the order in Pirkei Avot. And they wear tefillin. No, that's the original minhag. You wore tefillin all day. Could you imagine if we had to wear tefillin all day? We had in this base medrash, BMT. Over the years, we may have had one or two or even three. I remember certain names who wore tefillin all day. I remember a woman once said to me that this a young man was so kadosh, he never put his hands beneath the desk. All right. I'm not. Could you imagine to be on a level like that? Kol hakavod. All right, we don't wear tefillin all day. It's a bit of arrogance on our part. Mechzei kiyur, I would think, that Rav Moshe didn't wear tefillin all day, the Rav didn't wear tefillin all day. And we should wear tefillin all day, but okay, we have to respect Jews who go back to the original minhag of the Gemara. Nope. What do? You live in a small apartment. Today we live, Baruch Hashem, in big apartments. And you live in a small apartment. Where do you hide the tefillin at night? And remember, they didn't have the sanitary conditions we have. They didn't want rodents to get at the tefillin. They didn't want the tefillin to be robbed. They didn't want rain to come in and the tefillin. You know, many of Yisrael is, you kiss the tefillin. A sefer taught me never to kiss the tefillin. He always tells me you put it into the box, then you kiss it. Why? Into the natik, into the what? Because when you kiss the tefillin, saliva gets in and you ruin the tefillin ultimately. If you're very careful, I want to tell you that it's a 1,000,000,000% asa to do mitzitza b'peh. All right, I mean, I just don't understand the world. Reb Chaim Asad, Chaim Briska, he's not firm enough. Another baby just died in New York from mitzitza b'peh. It's in all the newspapers. It breaks the heart. Breaks the heart. I mean, how do you do things like that? Logic. All right, people didn't understand what saliva was 200 years ago. But you're all college graduates, you're all getting masters, you're all getting doctorates, you're all Talmidei Chachamim. But the Rav said that Yoel Schoenfeld's son's Brit, when they did Mitzitza V'Peh, he said, "You're lucky I'm more tolerant than my father. My father, Rav Moshe, would be hysterical Reb Chaim said you can't do it. Anyway, be it as it may with saliva, it's very dangerous, and we should live in a hygienic fashion. And dafka mitzitza b'peh, if you know the Gemara in Shabbos, it's just the opposite. We do mitzitza for health reasons. So if today we know that mitzitza b'peh is a problem, and you do it through a tube, a million times better. 1 zillion billion times better. It says the second kid who died this year from mitzitza b'peh, documented, herpes. Shem Yerachim. Okay. So Tana, an Amora, has relations with his wife. What does he do with the tefillin? So he puts the tefillin under his pillow. Omer Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yosef, Zimnin chada kamina kamei de Rava. One time, I was standing in front of my master, Rava. V'omali, zilaitali tefillin. Bring me my tefillin, I have to put it on. I went to look for them. And I finally found them. V'ashkachina ben kal lekasat. Shalom keneged rosho. And I found it between his sheet and his pillow. On the side, not where he put his head on the pillow, but on the side. What's the Gemara talking about? What's going on here? The Gemara adds, "Dabi Yadana, the Yom Tefillah." I knew this was the day his wife went to mikveh. Ulag Ronan. Halacha l'maisa, hu diavad, to teach me halacha l'maisa. That's why he sent me to bring the tefillin. Now, what does it mean? Rashi explains it. He knew that he had relations with his wife. He knew his wife went to mikveh. He knew it was the time of Ona. He knew the Rebbe lived with his wife. The Rebbe wanted to teach his Talmud, where do you put the tefillin? Under the pillow. Not where you sleep on it with your head. That would be disrespectful. But on the side of the pillow where you don't place your head. Why did the Rebbe send me to get the tefillin? Lagmurinim halacha hu halacha lamaisa hu diavad. The Rebbe wanted to teach me halacha l'maisa. And this is an unbelievably important Gemara. It joins the Gemara in Baba Batra. It joins the Maharil. And there's no question about it that we don't have to be hesitant with a tshuva. We don't have to be diffident with a tshuva. We can accept the tshuva when a Rav paskins halacha l'maisa. This is overwhelmingly important. This is telling us the buck stops here. The shakla v'tayer is over. The du-siach of the Gemara, the Rishonim, the interaction, the shitat, it's over. This is halacha l'maisa. This is what I paskin. And if he paskins halacha l'maisa, you have a right to be samach on it. And you cannot push it away by saying it's only a tshuva. That it's written under pressure. It's written under duress. It's written as a result of the vicissitudes of life. This is halacha l'maisa. Quite a gemara. There are not many gemaras. I don't want to go into more. I quoted them when I gave my lectures on sex and marriage. I quoted many Gemaras, but Chazal had a wonderful, open, positive attitude towards sex. And perhaps if Dora Feldman would have been raised in this atmosphere and this understanding, and her husband would have been a London, it could be we wouldn't have the Chilul Kvod Torah Tashem Tamima of unorthodox. Gentlemen, well to go. Tomorrow, sure. I decided to make it on the house to express my love for my Talmidim, but you better feel, and you tell me after class, if it's worth $99, $99,000, or $99 million. And tomorrow I reveal source, story, an aggravation that I don't write about in Washington. Kvod Hashem Hastedavah. Yitzchak, you have a very troubled face.
Well, I think it's in Perichet, I'm not sure, in Sochem. There's a question, if someone doesn't know, no, you send your Evan to go buy, to do a Korban Pesach, and it's a go to a man. So and he forgets. So the question is, because does that pass on it? So they said if it's a king or a queen, then it doesn't pass. So the Rambam says because he will kill the Eved out of anger if he finds out that the Korban Pesach is not accepted, or he'll kill the Chazal if they have passed it. You see, there's a psak on the
direct. Listen, you have that in Masechet Gittin in Ezekiel, because of the digduk and the halacha, Chorban Bayit came about. So you see, sometimes, as the Rav said, during the Holocaust, you don't think halachically, you react for the good of the Jewish people. I developed that, you remember my shurim. So it could be those are cases like that. But generally speaking, if someone's going to say to you, how can you be Samachan Rav Moshe at Geshribin HaTshuva? Big deal! But the Magen Avraham says opposite. No, you can be Samachan Rav Moshe because he paskin something halacha l'maisa. This is what it means.
This then is a principle. Last week we talked about the principle of consulting.
Right.
And this week we're developing
the greatness of halacha l'maisa.
Halacha l'maisa means siyata
d'shmaya. What we're going to come to, we're developing, you have no idea which material I have. Let me get there. Yes. I'm going to, at the end, you're going to see siyata d'shmaya. You're going to see it openly. Wait till you see under what context and who said it and the proof and what the implications are. Okay, let me just reiterate quickly. So what did we do today? We added on another example, Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe, Rabbi Young, and an anonymous rabbi out of covet for his great-grandson who studied in this very kollel and sat in the seat where Nathaniel Stern is now sitting. Okay. Do I have the right Nehemiah, sorry, Nathaniel is, I don't see Nathaniel. Okay, that's number one. Number two, we started scratching the surface with the whole question of halacha l'maisa. Can you depend upon it? Is it something that can knock out a psak? Can you argue with a Magen Avraham, let's say, and bring down a tshuva of the Chatam Sofer, then all the Bihuda, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Shaul Meshiv, and you see that the halacha lemaisa carries tremendous weight. We will pick up exactly where we left off. Hold on, I'm not finished. With a vort from the Chafetz Chaim that will blow your minds next week. Be'ezrat HaNotein Le'Evkach, a melodic vort in the nomen of the Chafetz Chaim. Gentlemen, I just want to recommend a sefer to you that's very much like the shiur I just gave. I was very impressed. Baruch Hashem, what makes a good teacher? You're getting courses now, I see, in how to speak, how to give a drasha, this, that. All these courses are good and wonderful. More important than anything is watching a good teacher. What makes a good teacher? Tell a story. Get the class excited. Get them involved. I'm holding a book in my hand that was written, Journeys in Talmud, by Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein. He is the son of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was the rabbi for a while of Rabbi Young Shul in the 1970s. I was already in Israel. And he takes sugyas in Shas and how to teach it. And here, one example, the foundations of making brachas on food. How does it begin? The other day I was in the middle of a cup of coffee when I realized that unfortunately, I couldn't remember if I had made a bracha before drinking. How should I proceed in this situation? Should I make a bracha just in case? Should it be machmir, or is it a bracha levatala? If I don't make another bracha, am I allowed to continue drinking, etc.? And every little subject he touches, he goes with the holidays, and the it's beautiful. Begins with a little story. He captures the minds of the audience. If you're going into being a rav or a mechanech, I highly recommend the sefer to you. Is it being sold in where can you buy it?
There's a Torah tribe of students that's selling it.
Oh, good. Okay, so do me a favor. Tell anyone who cares that Aaron Rakefet gives Haskama unbelievable. It's the greatest course I took in college. It was a course, Lahavdil, of educational psychology. I was a junior. What a textbook. Every chapter began with a live problem. How do you solve it? That's why I became interested in response to literature. He's in... Where does he give it? Monday night at Chovaveh. This is Rabbi Emanuel Burns. Yeah, he came to see me. He's my student through the... I'm so impressed. Wow, okay, that's great to hear. Okay, one other second. I just want to mention a great Kiddush Hashem, but they lost the finals. The author, the Houston Yeshiva High School, Barron High School, all the way, if I'm told that the New York Times, those Reformed Jews, had to write about these kids who were Mesa Nefesh to be Shomer Shabbos, but they lost the final Saturday night. So that too is important. Humility. You can't win them all until we meet again in health and happiness. Thank you so much. Das Vedanya.
They got Matt Lewis.